and on the weekend panel, with an eye on the past week's goings on, the international comedian and theatrical impresario.
Not right now.
Penny
right now.
Ashton.
Kia ora. Morning.
You're still a comedian.
Yeah, but not international.
Oh. Yeah.
Unless we count the Cook Strait. I mean, yes, indeed.
And Mike Williams, the former Labour Party president and chief executive of the Howard League, both with me in Auckland. Kia ora koroa. Nice to see you both. Before we get into the local topics, Prince Philip's funeral this morning, we discussed it earlier. Lovely music at it and a lot of solemn ceremony. And the Queen alone, the brothers Harry and William together afterwards. Any final thoughts on Prince Philip's life? You know, the 73-year marriage, the weight of majesty falling on the Queen, etc.
I got up this morning and I saw that picture of the Queen sitting by herself, and if you zoomed in on her eyes, they just looked so sad, and I cried. And that's I'm not a massive royalist. But a lot of people have been criticising him, and he definitely has things to be criticised for, but I mean, he was 100. Like, you think about the eras, the change in, you know, wokeism that he's lived through, and, you know, and yes, he said some stupid things and need to be taught to task for that, but I think people are very complex beings. He was very happy to be behind a woman at a time when that was very unusual. So, yeah, I have mixed feelings about him, but generally feel sorry for the Queen.
Mike Williams.
Well, I am not a monarchist in any sense at all, but he seems to me to have been a decent sort of a bloke. Yeah. Who had a sense of humour, and I was reading some of his quotes. "I hereby declare this thing open, whatever it is," which I thought was quite witty. So,
speaks to boredom of opening things, yeah. Doesn't it?
I'll be sad to see him go.
Yeah, I just think the Queen, like, I've been married 5 years, I'd be very sad, not 73.
Yeah, well, she did, and the aloneness didn't. Helped.
No, that like horrendous not to be able to. We're so lucky in this country that we can gather for things like that.
By the way, just quickly, you have Promise and Promiscuity coming up, which you have co-written with Jane Austen.
That's right.
Which was interrupted by a level 3 lockdown.
It was, yes. Okay. I'm doing it in Waiheke this weekend coming up, and then at Q Theatre in Auckland the following week. Yes, so fingers crossed. Like the bubble opening, you're like, hopefully something doesn't happen and it gets delayed again.
What's Jane Austen like as a writing partner?
She's very compliant. She doesn't complain at all.
A highlight or lowlight from the past week for both of you, please, Mike.
Okay, well, I had a highlight about an hour ago when I opened up the Sunday Star Times magazine, and it has a What's Up and What's Down column. And What's Up is Jim Mora's Sunday morning show on Radio New Zealand.
Really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, aww. We like his mellow, friendly tone, intelligent questions, and lack of sycophancy towards the celebs. And I thought, that's a little highlight of my week.
I'll go out and buy 50 copies.
There we go.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to mention that. How about you?
For me, it's about, like, we've got the Comedy Fest coming up, and just the festival organisers and the theatre organisers that are still making arts happen. And the Comedy Festival has just really thought very hard about how they've got all this stuff in place that if we do have a level change, it can still go ahead in level 2. They've gone to really great lengths to make that happen. So I think that's fantastic because, you know, who knows? It could all change. As soon as we hear that there's a press conference that Jacinda and Ashley are at, we all start going, oh no! So, you know, who knows? But I just want to give a shout out to them. We're doing our Jane Austen improvised musical because I am a one bonnet pony in Wellington. So yes, shout out to them and the Q Theatre has been amazing with the delays.
A one bonnet pony.
One bonnet pony.
Okay,
one
speaking of pony. What you've been alluding to, the Trans-Tasman bubble starts tomorrow. So your feelings on that? Auckland Airport Chief Executive Adrian Littlewood is pretty buoyant about prospects.
Oh, I think we're tens of thousands of passengers on day one because we're looking across the first few weeks and seeing the flight numbers grow by 10 times to about 400 flights between Auckland and Australia.
How do you feel, Mike, about our Aussie brothers and sisters arriving here en masse?
Well, I think we put it off for a long time. The Australians did a one-way bubble first. We were very conservative, and that's what the public liked. And I wasn't surprised at your research that Emmanuel Kalafatidis was talking about this morning. But I do personally think we are ready for it. We're going to have to get used to the idea of international travel at some time and what safer place. They have eliminated COVID the same as us.
Yes, our Penny, Research New Zealand told us earlier only 49% of Kiwis are definitely in favour of the bubble and 28% definitely not.
Yeah, I'm sort of, the only thing I'm a bit worried about is like that, you know, they're a lot better over there at their QR coding and things like that. We're bloody terrible at it here. Hardly anybody's using their QR codes. And my friend was saying that you can't go into a restaurant over there unless you show that you've signed in. And I just want to export our lax ways, you know, because we both need to be vigilant in this case. Because it, like, if there's an outbreak, the expansion and logistics around it is huge between two countries and all the states now.
Yeah.
So I just want everybody to do what they're supposed to do.
Do you think from here on in New Zealand it's going to remain pretty much COVID-free? What's in your bones about that?
I think it has to until the vaccinations, you know, until that's really in place. It kind of has to for the life to maintain what it is, you know. Otherwise, all the immunocompromised and elderly have to go back inside and all that sort of stuff. So I think it needs to.
I think it will hang around, but I was actually at a very interesting meeting in Wellington on Tuesday, and it was addressed by Ashley Bloomfield, and I got to ask a question, and my question was this. I wrote a piece about the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, and if the same number of people died from COVID as, you know, extrapolating the for growth in population,
yeah,
there would now be 55,000 people dead. And I asked Ashley Bloomfield what actually happened, because it raged for 2 years and then apparently just went away.
Mm.
And his answer was it spread enough, so there were enough people with
herd immunity.
Yeah. Herd immunity. He wouldn't use the word herd immunity, but that's what will happen, I think, and that's what he thinks will happen.
Yeah, especially viruses have lifespans.
Even with the vaccine as well. You know, that makes but that'll make a big difference.
There was no vaccine in 1918.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's what but I think that'll make it quicker.
Yeah.
Gary McLean told us last week, I think, not that it's a probability, but what they're keeping an eye on is the virus going into animals and then coming back out of animals re-energised. So.
Yeah, the variants are the big issue.
Yeah, that's right.
Is it time, an op-ed piece in the New York Times says it is, to rethink the Olympic Games in Tokyo? In this piece, you know, they could turn into a super spreader event with 11,000 athletes. Thoughts on that?
I think it's a terrible idea. You know, I did a random straw poll of very, you know, scientific on my Facebook. Most people were pro trans-Tasman bubble and most people were very vehemently anti the Olympics. Mm. I just said for the Japanese people, only 1% of Japan is vaccinated right now. So all these people coming in, and I think it should be mandatory to get vaccinated to go. I know, you know, you don't have to have a vaccine in your life, but if you want to go to the Olympics, you have to have a vaccine.
Look, I absolutely agree with that, and I'd point out Japan is one of the oldest societies in terms of elderly people on earth, so they're very exposed, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's cancelled.
Yeah, like the Japanese people don't want it to go ahead. And there was things about volunteers, like how are you going to keep us safe, the volunteers? They've got two masks and some hand sanitizer.
Yeah, it seems problematic in some senses right now.
Mm-hmm.
The managed isolation security guard who went untested between November and April and who may or may not have supplied his employer with incorrect information, here's Chris Hipkins.
From Monday, those difficult conversations have begun with employees who have jobs on the front line who have not been vaccinated.
Do you care about how difficult it is to commit yourself to a vaccination if you are on the front line of keeping COVID out of New Zealand? But, whose fault is this? Do you have a clear idea, Mike Williams?
I was absolutely infuriated by this, because there's a really easy way of tracking whether people have been tested or not, and that's by having a central database that is accessed by the testers, and they tick people off as they get the test. Now, that doesn't seem to have existed. The employer had one database and seemingly sometimes ticked the central database, and that's how this guy got away with it. Now, he did lie about having tests, and I'm sure the Prime Minister would not have said that if it wasn't absolutely true. But really, we've got to be better organised. We're good at big central databases. The electoral roll, the motor vehicle registry, they all work faultlessly.
We've got the tech. You agree with Mike?
100%. I was like, what do you mean 500 border workers haven't been regularly tested? Yeah. You know, that's just outrageous. Like, it's surely, exactly, we have the technology and also just so incredibly irresponsible of this person. And I think, again, I think it's like, if you are on the front line, you have to be vaccinated.
But Jim, I'd make the point that a health department, it's very fragmented. And when you switch from one DHB to another, apparently you're followed by a pile of paper.
Yeah, very different systems.
I mean, what is that all about? I mean, you should just have a number that takes all your records to the next place.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about DHB fragmentation.
Yes.
All right, 10 minutes to 9. Penny Ashton, Mike Williams. Judith Collins asks media to stop bugging Simon Bridges and Christopher Luxon about their leadership ambitions separately or jointly.
You know, these guys are working hard. Just let them get on with the job.
Is she right? Do we have more important things to worry about? She'll either get rolled or she won't, like any politician. And do you care? I should go to you first.
Right. Let me say this. I have met Judith Collins on two occasions in my role as the Howard League, and she was Corrections Minister, and I was frankly impressed with her. I actually think she's the best they've got at the moment. But these rumours are generated by her own party. Simon Bridges fudged the question about whether he supported Judith Collins. He said something like, for the moment.
Yeah. Mm.
Luxon gave a I'm going to be leader maiden speech and published it on Facebook and whatever. So, you know, this is entirely a self-inflicted wound in the National Party.
And it seems that that's just an ongoing thing. Leadership spills is just the fodder of media for decades. Like, ever since I started getting a bit more political, thanks to coming on the Jim Mora panel, I did. I was just like, oh, my God, the media is like sharks with blood in the water. They're like... Then they start putting them in their preferred prime minister polls. You know, like, why is Christopher Luxon even in that poll before, you know, he was even an MP? You know, and so it's everybody's fault. But indeed, like, you know, it's that whole leaking like a sieve. You know, it was the same with Cunliffe and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's just been endless.
The Labor Party went through this.
Totally.
It's what happens when you get badly beaten.
Yeah, exactly.
A shooting at an upmarket Auckland hotel this past week was linked to two other gang incidents. Shots fired at the Headhunters gang pad in Mount Wellington and the evacuation of a street on the North Shore. Police have assembled a special team focused on firearms-related violence. There are questions here, select one to reply to if you like, pertaining to how well the 501 returnees from Australia are being integrated, with police being armed more and more, and also public safety now at risk, i.e. it's not just in Turnison within the gangs anymore, they're disrupting life for the rest of us, and there are more guns, even though law-abiding gun owners handed a lot of them in. There are actually issues galore here, Penny.
Absolutely, and I was at a party last night and everyone was talking about, like, the Sofitel and you know, and I lived about 50 metres away from the one that happened in Glendine. You know, and it's confronting when it starts coming next door,
yeah,
et cetera. And, I mean, haven't we got new gangs now that didn't exist before
That's
the deporting,
right.
You know? And so I think, you know, thanks, Australia. But also it is quite terrifying in a way, but I have no solutions, I'm afraid.
I think we've got to handle the 501 deportees a lot better. And what I note is in the latest corrections budget, there is more money to do something about that. I mean, we are getting some of the worst gang members from Australia, and that we just initially we were just chucking them back into the community. We've now got a group of Comancheros, which never happened before the 501 deportation started. So thank you, Australia.
Yeah.
And they send us a terrorist.
I'm sorry to stay glum, but when you read all the glowing coverage of New Zealand, which is great, by overseas commentators, you know, there's little mention of the violent crime increase in the housing madness and the poverty and the homelessness. How well do you both think NZ Inc is doing right now?
Well, I mean, I think that's the same of every country in the world. Everybody wants to project the, you know, it's like everyone's Facebook. Everyone's projecting the best of them on Facebook without what's lurking underneath. So I don't think that's unusual. But I think, you know, we've just got our social issues and a lot of it comes back to inequality and, you know, colonialism and stuff like that. And so it's just work that has to be done on such a, like, the base level. You know, it's a lot of ambulance at the bottom of the cliff stuff that needs some investment.
A lot of work has to be done, Mike Williams.
A lot of work has to be done. And these problems have been building up for a long time. And I blame a neoliberalism and Rogernomics. I was brought up in Hastings in the 60s, 70s, and I can't remember poor people. There were certainly no homeless people, and there were strong unions. So I think that, you know, we've had this long period of neglect. We had one zero budget after another, if you recall, under National, and that meant no extra spending on health, housing, education, and we've got to overcome this. And frankly, I can't see how we'll avoid paying a bit more tax.
Yeah, Everybody wants it to be fixed, but nobody wants it to affect them. Mm. It's like it's the new housing legislation with the interest. You know, I've got some good friends who vote Labor and they're like, I don't know if I will now. And I'm like, well, something has to give and someone's going to have to be a bit upset about it, you know, and that's how it goes.
Speaking of people being upset, taking tobacco out of dairies, even though, despite the violence, the dairy owners want it, many of them, for the revenue. Getting chemists to sell it is one option, but US pharmacists didn't want to do that. They said their health providers, industry opinion here is mixed. Do you think bans work? 500,000 adult Kiwis still smoke, around 13%, similar to the number of cannabis users, actually.
I am an ex-smoker, and I'm still paying for it. And I had a hell of a job giving up. It is a profoundly addictive substance.
Yes.
Nicotine, and I strongly support what Dr. Ayesha Verrill is trying to do. I make him harder to get hold of. I like the idea of moving the age of availability up 1 year at a time. I think that's been tried successfully in Tasmania, and really we've got to get rid of it. And she makes the point that there is now a relatively harmless alternative which does deliver the addictive drug to you, called vaping. So let's see more of that.
Okay. Penny, more loftily, I noticed a bit of talk about this in the last couple of days. There is the question of whether it's the government's business to reach so deeply into the lives of adult New Zealanders, because there's all manner of self-harming that a government wouldn't dare touch, but it would, but it is thinking about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something about, you know, every cigarette is slowly killing you. I mean, you could say the same for alcohol, but it's not to the same extent. For me, because my grandmother died very slowly and painfully of emphysema in front of my eyes when I was 10. And it's like, I still get emotional thinking about that, which is hilarious. Well, it's not hilarious, but it's just ridiculous. It was, you know, it was quite a while ago. But, you know, it's, to me, it's just an insidious thing, you know. And again, I think the thing that's really worked the most is putting the price up, even though that's put the dairies in danger, absolutely. But that just goes to show, when you hit people in the pocket, then behaviour changes, which is why things like, you know, taxes and stuff like that work on things like sugary drinks and stuff. So I think that they're on the right track. And, you know, people may think it's invading their rights, but I don't care.
All right.
Because you'll still be alive.
Lighter topics to finish with, 3 minutes to go. Ashburton is looking to change its town slogan from "whatever it takes." Did you know that Ashburton's town slogan is "whatever it takes"?
I don't think I did. I'm not sure. They pop up all the time. You know, in marketing you hear a news and then it goes away. And because some of them stick. You know, Christchurch tried to change their name to "the city that shines." And that's come back to the Garden City. Everyone's like, nah, we're not having the city that shines. And it was the cathedral was the main thing of that. So, you know, that didn't last very well.
I know it's a hardy annual and we all have a guffaw. And we recall slogans like "fresh each day" for Canterbury.
Or like, you know, "it's all right here." That one's the who thought what, you know?
And great ones out of the Hutt Valley.
Or the Timmer's Hard was one that people tried to get it changed to "Timmer's Hard." Timmer's Hard. Or like Invercargill, "where dreams come true."
Well, I'm sure they do.
What sort of dreams?
That is a terrible thing to say.
I like Invercargill and I like the people, but "where dreams come true."
Does it surprise you that we actually think about this and try and implement it at a local level and try and find these slogans?
It seems utterly pointless to me. I wasn't aware of the Ashburton one and I find it absolutely hilarious. So at least has that kind of appeal, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it just was like justifying the marketing and PR departments at various places, you know, but the money they spend on these things is crazy. Invercargill's other one, I'm very good on Invercargill, "City of Water and Light."
That is factually correct.
Yeah, I mean, I like Southlanders. I've never had a bad show in Southland.
Auckland, once the council tried to change City of Sails to Auckland. First City of the Pacific, which would have been better, and it is actually the biggest city in the Pacific in terms of Pacific Islanders.
We had Auckland A for a while, remember
yes,
that?
Yes, Auckland yeah, A.
Oh, Auckland A. Auckland A, mate. All right. Mate, g'day, mate. Auckland A. Auckland
First
a.
City of the Pacific.
Yeah.
That's got more of a ring to it.
Oh,
that,
I liked it, but it didn't stick.
That's it. They revert. You can't help it. It's back to City of Sails, which I think makes sense, even though I don't know anyone with a boat. Anyone with a boat wants to take me out in the sea? I'm down with that.
46% of Americans want Dwayne "The Rock" Johnson to run for president. He says it would be my honour. Do you think he'd be any good?
I mean, hell, look at their track record. Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, bring it on. Yeah, I think, you know, he seems quite liberal, quite nice. Yes.
All right, and just finally, luxury car sales are up. They've never seen anything like it in America. Bentleys and Lamborghinis flying out the showroom doors. Rich people are bored by this pandemic, is the analysis, and this is their therapy. Mike, do you worry about getting rich and bored?
I do. Every moment of the day.
Oh, yeah. I lie awake at night.
Yeah, it keeps me awake.
Wondering how I could drive a... Daimlers are hideous. I do not get it. You know, and if you're really bored, maybe just...
Can I say, I bought a new car 2 years ago, ooh, and I drove everything. And I discovered that what I wanted was an SUV because I did take stuff for the dump for my family and that sort of thing. And I tried everything up to and including a Mercedes-Benz. And I ended up buying a Honda because for $50,000, it actually had everything that the Mercedes-Benz had except the label.
And on that free advertisement...
Never bought a new car. I just all that money driving off the lot.
And there is the contrast. Thank you both for the weekend, Ben.